When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Andrew Garfield joins the show along with director John Crowley to discuss their new film, We Live in Time, and we play another horror-themed bracket game. Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 326 of Real Blend, a podcast that hasn't slept since having Robert Englund on the show earlier this week. Ah, get it? Waka, waka, waka. He's Freddy Krueger. I'm Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to bring back another horror-themed playoff bracket. You guys had a lot of fun with that last week. I don't yet know what the topic is, but I think it's still something scary related in terms of the Halloween season. Speaking of the Halloween season, you guys should have gone and listened to our interview with the icons, Robert Englund and Heather Langenkamp, on behalf of Nightmare on Elm Street. It's on all of our channels, so go seek that out. But this week on the main show, Andrew Garfield joins the show, along with his director, John Crowley, on behalf of their new film, We Live in Time. A couple other people who live in time, Kevin McCarthy, Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., he lives in time. Jake Hamilton also lives in time. He's a Fox 32 in Chicago. And then Gabe Kovach, who's the producer, he's living in time as well, too. How are we doing?
Making it through this time.
My time bandits, how are you guys?
What's up, Sean?
Good, baby. Good to see you, baby.
Yeah, good to see you guys as well, too. It's crazy. It's time is whipping by. Jake, you mentioned it the other day, feast or famine. It feels like all of a sudden there's like a shit ton of things going on and like so much stuff to watch, so much stuff to juggle. We've got a bazillion junkets happening. It's crazy busy. How you guys keeping it together?
That's always the case. Sometimes Kevin and I will text each other and I'll, you know, because Kevin and I have very, very similar schedules at work, and I'll sort of go like, because sometimes, you know, you never know, are other people getting junkets maybe I'm not getting, or getting interviews I'm not getting? And so I'll go, Kevin, like, You got stuff to air this week? And Kevin's pretty good about texting me like, dude, I got nothing. That's when you start getting really creative and you're like, oh, that person that I wasn't going to air from that junket 3 weeks ago, guess what?
Yeah.
You're making the air, baby. But then in cases like, you know, like now we all have, you know, 6, 7, 8 junkets this week, and we all have different respective film festivals happening right now. Sean, I know yours is coming up. Mine's happening right now. It's a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah.
A lot of good television on right now, too. Mm. Currently, I'm struggling to keep up with a bunch of things you guys have recommended. Trying to watch Before on the Apple TV with Billy Crystal. Trying to do Disclaimer as well, too. Have Agatha, have Penguin. It's a ton of stuff. But
including all
good movies that are coming as well, too. The award season heating up. I don't know if you guys have heard this before, but this show started out as an awards podcast.
Take a shot.
Yeah, for the Oscar season.
I still have the email.
Yes, you do. Shared it the other day in the text thread. And we started a YouTube channel as we've grown over the years. So if you're listening to us on here, hello. Thank you very much. You're getting a video proportion of the of the show, in addition to the audio podcast as well. You can go to youtube.com/realblendpodcast. And of course, all the different places you get your audio needs met. If you would like more of this nonsense, you can sign up for Real Blend Premium. It gets you an ad-free version of the show. It gets you a newsletter. And there's information in the description wherever you happen to be listening to it about how you can get to Real Blend Premium. So we have a really important interview that we want to throw to. We're trying to get more actors on the show. We've been a director's medium. Obviously, we love having directors on. Over the past couple of years, we've been lucky enough, especially recently, to get a couple of actors to come on and talk about their process, especially paired with the director. That's been a great mix. And when we had the opportunity to get Andrew Garfield on, obviously, we all jumped on it. We're huge fans of his. Mm. Obviously, not just personally for me from the Spider-Man perspective, but we get into talk about The Social Network and his work with Mel Gibson on what's the name of that film?
Hacksaw Ridge.
I was going to say Hamburger Hill.
That is a film. That is a...
It is, and it's a war movie. Yeah, that's Clint. So I can see where my head was spinning. But anyway, we're so happy to have him on supporting this movie in particular. It played at the Toronto International Film Festival. It is in limited release right now. It's going wider. We were sort of efforting what theaters it was going to be going to, but it should be reaching some markets as well soon. And so without further ado, without Joker Foley ado.
Oh.
I'm going to keep
as most theaters will soon be. Terrifier.
This is Andrew Garfield and his director, John Crowley, on behalf of the new film, We Live in Time.
Congratulations to you guys in the film. We're so excited to chat with you.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you too, John. I cried so hard last night. The woman next to me leans over and goes, "Are you okay?" And that's how I thought. Yeah, that's
a good sign.
That happens to him at every screening, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, very true. Yeah.
You should have seen him after Transformers 1. He was like, he just lost there.
Very odd.
Good.
All right, I'm going to kick us off. We are the Real Blend Podcast. We are a filmmakers podcast. We like to dig deep into the nitty gritty of filmmaking. So please, as we like to warn our guests, get as nerdy as physically possible. Andrew, I want to start here with you. We've been lucky enough to interview a number of people on this show who claim that they have learned unusual life skills because of things they needed to know how to do something for a role. And I'm curious, with that in mind, how comfortable would you be helping a pregnant woman deliver a baby after this film?
Yeah. That's funny.
Step in. I got this. I've got this.
Yeah. I pretended to do this one with no stakes attached. The honest answer would be no, thank you. I would absolutely pass it over to someone else. If I happen to be the most qualified person in the room for whatever reason, because I had been given advice during a scene, I would be very, very worried for the mother and child. And I would absolutely step in. I would 100% give it a go because I know the bare minimum. And my brother actually has delivered babies in his life because he's a doctor and he's a lung specialist now. But when he was in training, he was on lots of different rotations. So, you know, I was able to call him after that day and be like, "You're not dad's favorite anymore." I just got a notch up on you, maybe, because I act. And I also do what you do.
And you deliver babies. I deliver eight times a day as well.
You were never Spider-Man, but I delivered babies.
That's exactly true. Has he ever been in a movie? No. Thank you very much.
I think Bryce Dessner's score is absolutely brilliant. I think it's one of the best scores I've heard in a long time. And I think it's a leading character in the film. I was humming the music when I left the theater. And so this question is for both of you, Andrew first and then John. Andrew, the emotional relationship you have with a score you see your performance set to, I know that the music is not there when you're filming, and I have to imagine emotionally when you finally see your performance is set to score, like even with Reznor Ross and Social Network and the amazing composers you've been scored to, what does that feel like and what do you reveal about your performance through music? And John, for you as a director, do you direct your composers as an actor in a way because they are such characters, especially here in this film?
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's the difference when I see a kind of an edit or the final edit of the film, not color corrected, not mixed, not without the necessary ADR lines, without credits, without score, and then seeing the film with all of that there and an audience, it's like you don't know what the film is until all of those elements are there. It can literally change the whole nature of the experience. And I would say, you know, all of those things in equal measure, but I think the most evident ones would be when music is in and an audience are in. And that feels pretty obvious, but yeah, I'm deeply moved every time that final piece and vital piece is there, because it is the universal language of the heart, I think, music as well as story, and you know, the kind of the totality of the artistic experience of seeing a film with all of those different artistic elements in is kind of, it's unlike any other art form. And I also love the score in this, and I found it to be, it's so interesting. I think a great score in moments wants to be noticed, and in moments wants to be almost invisible, like sub-perceptual, but in a kind of support. I think John will be able to speak about this better than me. But I found it so beautifully moving. You're right. It's such a tender score and tender music choices throughout the film as well. Yeah, I'm just so suddenly the film becomes not mine anymore when the score and all of those final pieces are in, particularly with an audience. So yeah.
And for you, John.
I would say it's not quite directing an actor, right? It's very different, because in lots of ways the process with this one was, and I didn't you know, start with Bryce until about 12 weeks into the edit. And I didn't know what the identity of the music should be. And so I worked with the music editor, trying a huge array of different music on the film. The film kept effortlessly sort of shrugging it all off. You put the wrong piece of music on the film and it sort of thins it out. It becomes the wrong kind of film. It's horrible. It just creates a stink. It's awful. But I met Bryce. I'm a huge fan of his work. And he had a very visceral connection to the film. I was very excited about the journey. So we started the journey. He sent me huge amounts of music. And we were trying lots of different pieces on it, almost like a lattice work, trying to see which bit would fit where. And that theme that Andrew, you know, refers to, which happens three times in the film. It opens the film and it happens when they're back to back at the doorway. And then there's this, the end. You can say it's kind of the love theme, really. Was tucked away in a piece, and it didn't have that many champions and people around me. It was sort of, you know, but I thought that the actual melody was perfect, because it just hovered between happy and sad. And it was sort of nailing something so truthfully. So I asked Bryce to rework it. I mean, he did it in different iterations, and then it began to unfurl itself, and that became, in lots of ways, the spine. Some of the stuff then was more like, it's too melodic. It needs to be sub-melodic. It needs to be more ambient. And that was stuff. He came to the editing room and he sat there with his guitar sometimes or with his synths, and he played and created in response to the performances. Though it was, you know, and I loved that it wasn't an intellectual process of it should sound like a bit like this score and a bit like that score. There was none of that there. It was much more organically growing the piece, and it was a very happy process making the score, but it was not excellent. Intellectually led.
You know, excellent score. Excellent score. Yeah.
Guys, for both of you, there's this old cliche that oftentimes we use when it comes to really powerful, impactful movies, which this obviously is, that when they're over, they make you want to call someone, right? Call someone and just say, you know, you're important and I love you. And I was wondering if it's your movie, if you directed it, if you started it, if you're still able to be impacted the same way we are. So I guess the extension of what I'm asking is, what's the most one of your own films changed your behavior when you got home at the end of the day? Maybe it made you appreciate life differently, or to use the cliche, maybe even pick up the phone and call someone and say, you know what? I love you.
God, it's so hard to separate the making of it from the watching of it. I think the first thing that comes to mind is when I saw the first cut of Tick, Tick, Boom.
Oh, God.
And I was kind of overwhelmed by it, because I felt like as I was watching it was so weird, and this is going to sound very actory, but as I was watching it, I could feel myself start to watch it through very different eyes. I became myself as a 19-year-old drama student wanting to make a career and full of it was like some weird cellular regression happened, and I was watching my own story play out as an artist longing to live as an artist just before I met John to make Boyer. And that there was something really, really profound about that. And and after watching that film, I kind of, it was like the last 20 years of my life made sense. I was like, oh my gosh. And now I've got to make a film that maybe if I feel inspired as a 19-year-old watching, as a longing to live, there's probably going to be a lot of musical theater artists, musicians, writers, actors, directors who will watch this and go, fuck, I have to pick up that, you know, that empty canvas again. I have to go back to school for this, or I'm just about to give up. And lo and behold, we were we were met by so many of those people that felt like it was a talisman for them. Mm-hmm. But for me, after seeing the film, I definitely felt, oh my God, I got to let everyone who's helped me to get to the place where I can make a film like this that's going to be seen. I got to let them know how I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't have the life that I have without them, including, you know, my first drama teacher back in high school, including, you know, the person that ran the drama workshop outside of high school, including, you know, my mother who encouraged me to do it in the first, you know, all of these different like moments along the way, like someone like John for believing in me when I was a younger person. Like, yeah, so that film definitely did something that kind of blew me open in a way that I was like ready to receive it. I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be okay. We were okay. And like, you know, there's going to be countless other people who watch this and hopefully will be inspired to make sure that their artistic dreams are met as well.
That's awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
John, I think if I asked Andrew this, he'd kind of downplay it, but I want you to be able to speak to what a good listener he is on screen as a performer. I think Tobias is such a good listener, and I started to realize throughout the course of the film how difficult it must be to hold the screen while that character is absorbing as much as he has to. Is it something that you specifically asked of Andrew? Is it something that you noticed that he brings to the table?
I think you can notice he's a good listener in life, for a start, right? So I certainly did not ask him to do that. I mean, it's part of his presence as an actor. It's the whole deal. And I can give you one anecdote which will illustrate this fully, which was when we were shooting that scene, the underground car park scene, between Florence and Andrew, 10 minutes into the film. It's the first bit of really sort of heavy lifting they do emotionally in the film. And after we shot it, Florence called Andrew and myself over to the side and said that, I don't understand what just happened. That was easier than it should have been. And she didn't mean it didn't cost her. I think she genuinely had never had the degree of presence she was feeling in an actor who was behind the camera or on the camera, but literally the silent web of energy and attention and emotional sort of not saying what he wants to say as the character in the scene. It pulled her through that scene in a way that she had never experienced anything like. So yes, he is an extraordinary listener of in moments, and an extraordinary speaker as well when he opens his mouth. But I look, you know, it's something that I think great stage actors often learn, and it's perhaps more encouraged in a certain kind of theater acting maybe than in film acting. But I couldn't agree with you more. I think the quality of listening is everything in a film.
If I may add to that, thank you, John. And if I may add that there's another quality of very sensitive, intent listening that John has as well as a director. And I'm not just saying this to even the playing field. I'm saying it because it's true. And I think you're right about what happened in that moment for Florence. Maybe the first time she's had that kind of couched, safe, cared for, tended to feeling in that kind of quality on a film set in a scene that is nerve-wracking and hard. And I also think that John has to take some responsibility for that as well, because one of the gifts that John brings as a film director and as a theater director, but particularly in film, because the quality of creating the quality of attention and focus on a film set is, as we all know, incredibly fucking difficult, particularly when you're on a location that has variables that are out of our control. We're in a public parking lot, and there was like a big moving truck that came past at one point, and they were like, there was a beeping that happened in the middle of, I forget whose close-up it was, but it was like, even within that, there was this kind of, John made sure that the playing space for the actors was sacred, was quiet, was calm, was not being interrupted or violated, or that the energy wasn't being made anything but clear as a canvas for the actors, me and Florence, to come and do our work.
It's amazing.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm endlessly fascinated by the nonlinear structure of the film. And I want to say thank you for not spoon feeding it to the audience. We didn't know, we didn't need to be told on screen 1 year later, 2 years prior. Like, we are collaborating with the film as audience members. And it's a really cool thing for a film to trust and know an audience is smart to follow those things. What it reminded me of is memory, scattered memory of different aspects of time where you think about things. I'm curious, from a filmmaking perspective, emotionally, Andrew, for you, did you get to film each timeline in order? Were you jumping in and out? Because I know films are generally shot non-linearly, but because, like, I'm just so interested to know how each was filmed.
Yeah, we were pretty just as per usual on a film schedule. Like, we were tied into locations, really. It was about locations, as far as I'm aware, John. And then Florence's head shaving. That was the only thing, yeah. Obviously, we couldn't undo. There was a wig. She had a wig with the bangs, right? And then she had her natural hair without the bangs for the other period. Wow. So the bangs are early on. But were the bangs ever her natural hair, or was that always a wig?
It was always a wig.
Yeah, and then she had natural hair for the the final period of the middle period of the film. No, the
I tell a lie. The very first day of shooting, she had some bangs on because we were shooting in. So we did. Yeah. I mean, we tried to cluster scenes so that it wouldn't fry their heads. You know, we tried to gather a bunch of scenes around rather than jumping all over the place in one day.
But yeah, it was a considerate schedule. It was definitely a considerate schedule for the actors amidst the practical
chaos
things. Yeah.
But it always, you never brought it to set. It always felt like when you stepped into each scene, both of you were lucidly clear about what we were doing. And maybe that was 2 weeks of rehearsal, that you sort of had studied the map very well. So you kind of knew the territory. And we were able to, you know, get down to work pretty quickly with it. But even more so, it was out of schedule.
But the writing was really good. The writing was so good and so clear. So wherever we kind of were dipping in terms of the timeline, it was even though, of course, both myself, Florence, and John, all three of us had, you know, we were aware of what comes next chronologically. I think I had a script that was chronological at some point that I made.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Just to kind of, you know, make sure that I wasn't missing a trick. But also, like, the way that each scene is written felt so clear in terms of where they are, like, gesturally. It just felt very, very simple and clear. And I think what, you know, again, just, and this is the truth, and this is not something that I can always, you know, say, but, like, the fact that it was Florence and John made it so that we could get quite deep quite quickly in terms of, you know, sure, I think rehearsal helped. I, for sure, definitely, and just spending time with each other helped. But I think it's a testament to Florence as an actor. Like, she's able to drop down pretty damn fast. And I think it's a testament to the three of us that really created this kind of trust circle, I suppose, for all that intimacy.
Andrew, do you remember the first time you had to shave your head for a role?
Me, I've only shaved my head once. And it was I did it on screen, actually. I'm realizing as we speak, this is not my first rodeo when it comes to shaving a head. I shaved my own head for a music video for Arcade Fire for a song called We Exist that I shot in the middle of this amazing Spider-Man 2 press tour, which culminated. We shot the first day in the middle of the desert in somewhere in Palm Springs or Indio, and then Arcade Fire headlined Coachella, and the last shot was a one-er on a Steadicam of me suddenly on stage with Arcade Fire in this kind of transformed kind of place. And I shaved my head at the beginning of that music video.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
Guys, without getting into spoilers, when this movie cut to black at the end, I desperately wanted to know what happens next. Like, I could have stayed with this story for another 2 hours because I was so invested in this family. And I'm sort of curious, as a storyteller and as an actor, do you ever, just for the hell of it, discuss what happens after a movie cuts to black? Is that something that you care to know?
Gosh, it's nice to imagine. It's nice to kind of dream about.
Yeah, there's nothing that you wouldn't discuss. You know, I think it's the perfect moment to leave these two characters who are now pointing forward, you know. And it wasn't the last scene in the film as scripted. The last scene was where she came in and said, "I'm in remission." And
oh, wow.
I was sure that would play. And I remember, you know, the thought that, you know, in life, sort of death is irredeemable, you know, whereas in storytelling, it's redeemable. And I was sure the time structure would allow us one more glimpse of her that would feel truthful and almost make sense of the time structure. But actually, the cracking of the egg, tiny detail, flat surface, captures the significance of Almut's legacy in their life.
And I am Kevin not has a way. Yeah, Kevin has a new way to crack eggs.
I'm not just saying this. Yesterday, I was in my kitchen and I was making four eggs with spinach, and I was bummed because I didn't have any American cheese to put it in, but I just made them anyways. And I was sitting there after I saw the film, and I started cracking the eggs literally the way you do in the film because of that scene. And it was actually the best way to crack them. I only got one piece of shell and I got it out immediately. So, Andrew, for you, and this might be an interesting question, but like, movies can change the way you do things in your daily life. And I was just curious, have you ever seen a film or had a part in a film that changed the way you physically did something in your own life, the way maybe you drove, or like getting out of a parking spot a certain way, or the way, you know, I'm just curious if you've ever had that. As audience members, we have it all the time.
Wow. Wow. Oh my gosh. I love this question. And I don't know. I think the things that are coming to my mind, it's like, I think the films that I've done,
Movies you've just seen, doesn't matter. Yeah, either one.
Yeah, yeah, well, I'm thinking, like, in terms of the films I've done, like, they've shown me my limitations more than anything. There's actually like, oh, I can't do that. Like, I remember doing Hacksaw Ridge, and you know, I was late 20s, early 30s. I was young and fit and healthy, and you know, I became obsessed with what this man could do and this character Desmond Doss and the miracles that he was performing. And I was like, you know, when we get into that scene where I'm dragging all the bodies, I'm doing it for real and I'm going to do it. And I'm going for it, of course. And then I go to drag the first body and he's like smaller than me, lighter than me. And I start dragging him and I'm like, okay, no, put him on a wire. Put him on a wire, give me the assist. And it was take one of body one. And it was like, oh no, this guy, but it made me realize, it was like, this guy was filled with the strength of 1,000 lions because of the necessity. Like, I guess I just didn't have, like, it wasn't life and death in terms of making a film, but like, what I didn't expect was like, oh no, there's no way of a human being, especially built like me, being strong enough to carry one body to that distance, let alone 71, the size of Vince Vaughn and God knows who else. So it's more just like, I just get, you know, and also, you know, I think like the beauty of doing something like Tick Tick Boom, where I was learning how to sing and play piano and all these things and doing dance rehearsals, like, it takes so long to acquire a complicated skill, and then it takes so short a time to lose it all completely. Mm. So, like, I'm frustrated by that because my piano playing is bad again. My singing is less than good again. My dance, you know, it's this weird. I get to live into these fantasies as an actor, and then you know I learned how to frame a house for 99 Homes, and I've forgotten how to do any of that. Like I pick up a hammer the wrong way around. You know what I mean? Like it's pathetic. But thank you for the question and the self-loathing that it's created in me.
Do you crack eggs that way though now because of the movie?
I haven't actually I don't know, but I will. I absolutely will. That feels like a practical thing I can actually.
Yeah, man. Two bowls.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah. Two bowls.
Andrew, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to ask you something I've always wanted to or have wanted to for the past 10 years. It's 10th anniversary of Amazing Spider-Man 2, a film that's very, very important to me. We've talked a bunch over the years. Spider-Man's my favorite character. We both grew up with him as childhood heroes. I never got a chance to ask you about filming Gwen's death. And the emotional places you have to go to for that, I almost feel like it's parallel to a couple of things you have to do here. I had heard stories that you and Emma kind of avoided each other in the run up to the filming of that. I was wondering if you could maybe tell the story of shooting that devastating scene that stays with us so much. And do you use any of those techniques? Did you use any of the techniques you use there on this film here?
Yeah. So as you know, I, you know, read that script and I read that scene and I thought, okay, this is obviously a really important moment in the canon of the character. And I am excited that we are doing it. And then like the nature of those scenes, when you read them on the page and they're far enough away from being filmed, you're like, hell yeah. And then as the time before filming gets smaller and smaller, you start to try to figure out a way of injuring yourself so that you don't have to do it because there's so much pressure on it and it matters so much. And all the demons start to come, which is, oh no, I'm not able to do this. They're going to realize that they have to recast and it's too late because we've already shot one movie and we've already shot half the film.
It's like Back to the Future.
Yeah. It's like going,
you get Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz. Yeah, God bless Eric Stoltz. But you know, he was the day comes and I get very specific with Mark and with Mark Webb, our director, and I say, okay, so I want to make sure that we nail this, obviously. He's like, yeah, me too. So I just kind of ask for what I need. And I ask for a closed set. I asked for a close up to be shot first so that I could come in fully loaded so that we could capture the first spontaneous, most emotional response. I said, what's the shot you're going to be most using in terms of for the emotion of the scene? Mm. And he said, it's going to be this shot. I'm like, well, let's set that up and let's make sure that like, because obviously there's also another tricky bit where Emma as Gwen has to have a harness on, has to be like suspended at the top of that that moment, and I have to take the webbing off, but yeah. I have to unclip her.
Right.
So there's a technical aspect as well. So we rehearsed that for that setup, so that all the technical things are there, and then. And then, because all I want is the time and the space to allow the truth of the moment to happen, and all of the preparation, that emotional preparation, to be able to serve that scene, and I think we did about two takes of that close up, and I think they probably used most of the first take, to be honest.
Wow.
That's usually the way it goes. And I think it was the same with saving MJ in the last Spider-Man film as well. I kind of had the same process with John Watts. I was like, yo, in the middle of this romp, there's this very serious thing that I have to do. Like usually most of the time I'm just improvising with the guys and fucking around and we're just like trying to have as much fun as possible. But obviously this moment is, you know, a big emotional piece in the film.
Yeah.
So can we get specific about how you want to do that? I was like, yeah, he was amazing with it as well, John Watts. And we set it up so that Zendaya was on a a platform and that we shot my close-up first. She was so cool with that. But then like we were just, I was prepped. We were just about to shoot it. And she was there. She was ready. She was being super sensitive and respect. Like, she was just very like, she knew I was in my zone. She was just so great. And then they realized that her hair was done in the wrong way for the scene. So we had another 30 minutes. Right? While I'm just like pacing around in my Spider-Man outfit. Like, whatever. This is the shit that happens. It just happens. It just happens. And it's just the way it goes. And I remember one of the big scenes, the big emotional scenes that we shot on this film, which actually is not in the final film, but I won't say exactly what it is because it doesn't matter. But it was again a conversation that I had with John beforehand, and we were so prepped. It's I think you know the scene I'm talking about where that we had to rewrite the thing that I was reading from. Yeah, so like I had to read a specific thing from a journal in front of a lot of people, and you know, me and John, we were talking about which shot we were going to start with. And it was a big emotional moment. And I had taken the morning to prep and I had my headphones in. I was just there and I arrived and I'm looking through my journal and it's all written incorrectly, the stuff that I had to read. And I was like, okie dokie, this is because then suddenly you're in your head.
Yeah.
And as opposed to being in your body, and then suddenly you're not feeling safe to go and do. So for me, it's like getting all the technical stuff, all the stuff that is that, so that I can just show up and live. And so we had to just pause and I had to rewrite it myself and make sure that everything was good. And then John was so generous and gave me as much time as I needed. And we came and we shot it. But yeah.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
We are out of time, guys. Thank you so much for coming on.
Sorry,
talking about it.
I bogarted the mic a bit.
And Andrew, your eyes and you taste that food for the first time. Just wanted to tell you that's some of the best acting I've ever seen, the way you went into that. I just wanted to explain that to you. But yeah, we got to wrap up, unfortunately. So
yeah, hopefully we got you guys a few questions you hadn't heard yet during the press tour. So
absolutely.
We love having you guys on. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for the time.
Care, guys.
Enjoyed it.
Appreciate it.
We would like to thank our good friends at A24 for setting up the interview with Andrew and John. Always nice to have John on. Gabe pointed out something really funny. Whenever we have John Crowley on, he brings an amazing guest with him. The first time was Roger Deakins.
Wow.
At the Toronto International Film Festival. Yeah. It was Deakins paired with John Crowley.
It was Sean and I. That was incredible.
That was pretty incredible.
I was just sitting on the floor with a mixer, just like trying not to freak out.
The Goldfinch?
Yeah.
That's when Jake and I were in the lobby at where every celebrity was staying and all these major A-listers walking by. And then we see Deacon's hair leave the elevator. And we heard about Jake and I were just like it was like squirrel from up, like squirrel. Like we literally like ran over and just like we were so insanely excited to meet him, and I think he was like shocked that anybody in the lobby of that hotel knew who he was.
He's in Chicago tomorrow.
Aren't you doing something with him?
Yeah,
Jacob?
He's opening up. There's an art exhibit of his work, like framed pieces of his work, opening here in Chicago through April, and he is going to be here for a special 30th anniversary screening of Shawshank Redemption. And I'm doing a little sit down, little city sit with him tomorrow. And he's going to walk me through his exhibition. And
should film the interview with the Deaconizer lenses from Jesse James and just blur out.
It's so funny. My my cameraman who I work with many, many times, and Kevin, you met him, Stuart. He's my all time favorite cameraman to work with. But he also he's a movie fan, but doesn't really get jacked up by meeting celebrities. Like he's come with me on junkets and stuff, and he's never really. Doesn't really care. He's shooting the Deacons interview tomorrow, and he's so nervous about being judged about the lighting. He wants to show up an hour early and
tell him
to
shoot it on film.
I told him that. So well, I just think it's hilarious that that's the person he's getting nervous about.
Of course he is. I would be petrified as well too. It's going to be amazing. That should be really cool. Over under 50 photographs from Jesse James in the exhibit.
Well, if it's under, then I'll just start posting different.
Right. Please,
different photographs.
It should just be the entire
film. He has to know no country and Jesse James and Skyfall. There's three top tiers.
I mean Blade Runner.
I mean, Blade Runner.
2049 is good.
What are we even?
Yeah, but I think Raising Arizona is another good one, too.
Is his most iconic shot, though, Tim Robbins in the rain?
I don't know.
It might be the most, like...
I'm not saying the best, but the most where people are like, oh, I know that.
It might be the most seen shot.
Yeah.
The most people have seen that. Because I feel like that's
it gets used in montages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The three... inmates escaping in Oh Brother is pretty iconic.
Oh yeah, that's another really good one.
Sean hates that movie for some reason.
Yeah, I know, right?
And maybe I'm just in the target audience, but I feel like a lot of Blade Runner 2049 still images,
yeah,
like went crazy because so much of that film is really striking.
Yeah, well, Gosling from behind when he's walking through that very orange landscape.
Then the digital sign of Honor de Armas is is that Honor de Armas?
Yeah.
Before any of us really knew who she was, at least for me.
Yeah.
Well, Roger Deakins did not shoot We Live in Time, but let's give it a review. It is our movie of the week. This is one of those funny movies that goes to, in my opinion, goes to Toronto International Film Festival, comes out with a lot of buzz. People, you know, willingly or not, or correctly or not, start to put things into like awards conversation. I don't think this is an awards play. I think this is just a perfectly sweet movie that people are going to enjoy. And should go see, you know, absolutely worth going to go see. You're getting two movie star performances from Garfield and Florence Pugh. They do have, as people have said, unbelievably great chemistry. We talk about it in the interview with both Andrew and John Crowley, the nonlinear format of the storytelling. It's this relationship, but it makes it very, very clear in the opening scene that Florence Pugh's character is eventually going to be battling cancer, and it's how it's going to affect their relationship, the way it pulls it apart. The two of them are so incredible, you know, in just about almost everything that they do. And so watching them for 2 hours together was great. I do have an issue with the last few minutes of the movie.
It's because you have no heart. That.
We could discuss when we have some more details. I thought it worked. I thought it worked really well. I wasn't blown away by it, but I thought the two of them were really great. You guys, I think both of you, Kev, you, the way you two talked about it, seemed to like it a little bit more than I did.
Of course I was joking. Sean has a huge heart, but I found one of the questions that you just heard in the interview, and I'll keep this fast, was just the idea of not spoon feeding the audience where we were in the timeline. And I appreciated that. I think a lot of films are under the impression sometimes that audiences can't follow things. I love when a filmmaker trusts that an audience is smart, because audiences are smart and audiences do have the ability to collaborate with the film in that way. And I don't like when I'm spoon fed information. Let me kind of figure out where I am in the story. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the filmmaking process, the performances. Where are we? Oh, we're here, because you lean into the story more. And you're more attuned to the structure of the movie. And I think they're fantastic together. The score is remarkable. And I think, you know, Andrew and Florence really are, they're the heart of the film. And there's, Sean brought up a great thing at the beginning of the interview about the a pregnancy sequence, which is one of the best scenes in the whole film. And I just love that scene because it felt so realistic. Yeah. So I loved it. I would highly recommend seeing it.
Yeah, I loved it as well. It's the kind of movie that I described is like so genuine and authentic that you almost just sort of feel as an audience member like you're kind of in the corner of the room eavesdropping. It felt, you know,
which is a little bit funny when you think about that story that went viral.
Did you read the article? You know, sometimes, you know, exactly. If you don't know the Andrew Garfield, Florence Pugh, not hearing cut story, it's fantastic. But, you know, it's just a very real, honest, raw movie. And sometimes those, I feel like, can be overwritten, where you just sort of think like no one speaks like that. Like real conversations don't go that way. Real conversations are messy, and life is messy. And sometimes movies like this try to Hollywoodize this sort of situation way too much, with, you know, and bringing in the string symphony when things start getting sad. This one just felt very matter of fact and like, hey, this is two people and this is their story. So just like, just be quiet and go stand in the corner and watch it unfold. And I thought it was beautiful.
We were talking a bit about Andrew's performances leading into the conversation. I mean, how do you not mention Tick, Tick, Boom? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I
forgot to mention that. That one was extremely high. One of his best. Oh, easily. And that's the thing. Like, if he were, since this was an awards podcast, if he were to get himself into the conversation, which I don't think is going to happen, I think it's just too competitive of a year, this year right now. But if he were, it would be one of those things where we would then talk about the other times that he got overlooked, because it's crazy he didn't even get a nomination for Social Network, which is something I keep forgetting. He did get one for Hacksaw Ridge and Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah.
Hacksaw Ridge is incredible.
It's really good. I love that story he told about trying to carry the guy.
Yeah.
And then learning how difficult that is to do.
He's had a great enough career where he can tell he's got amazing stories like that. You know, like early in someone's career, maybe they don't have as many on-set experiences to yield interesting stories to fill a podcast. Garfield has more than plenty.
Absolutely. All right. So that's We Live in Time. As mentioned, it's making its way around to theaters. Three highly recommends from us. Great performances by Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. Again, loved having Andrew on the show. He and John Crowley are welcome back anytime. Gabe has been having a lot of fun recently setting up these Gabriel horror movie brackets.
Ooh. Oh.
So we're doing bracket fights.
This is going to get spicy. I'm putting my glasses on for this one.
The people need to go to the YouTube channel. You're going to have more fun if you're on the YouTube channel.
I'm
already having anxiety about the top right choice.
There's a lot going on here.
All right, so, game on.
Okay,
we'll get right into it. But just for the audio listener, horror movie bracket. It's a pretty comprehensive list. There's probably some exclusions. Comment down below if there's some that you
Gabe, does this come pre-loaded or you do this?
I put all these matchups together, so this you can check the link down below, you or the description down below. I'll give you a link. But you can customize these. People put up sort of templates of them. I customize this from someone's
bracketfights.com. That's a real thing.
I love it. Well done, Gabe. This is fantastic.
I put together these matchups. If you're disappointed in any of these matchups, that's my fault. But let's jump into it. We're starting off with a Peele special.
So the main theme here is just that we're talking like the best of the two of the horror films that you have.
I always think of this as like a this or that. So like you get one or two. Which one are you give that as you may.
I'll go first. So it's Get Out versus Us. Audio listeners at home. I think it has to be Get Out. I just think Get Out is a perfect movie. I think Us is also fantastic. But if you're putting the two of them side by side, I think Get Out.
I think Us is underrated. I think it gets overlooked.
Here's the thing. I would rather watch Us, but Get Out is a better movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Really?
Because I like the slasher element of Us.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Us is so funny too. I mean, they both have a lot of humor.
And that Lupita Nyong'o performance, to me, the fact that it didn't get a Best Actress Oscar nomination is a travesty. But your Get Out is the correct choice.
Yeah, I think Us is incredibly underrated. I think I loved it, and I think it following up Get Out is almost impossible because it's one of the greatest scripts of all time. I will say I give it to Get Out for multiple reasons, but I also think Get Out is one of the greatest rewatchable films I've ever seen. When I rewatch it, I find something new every single time, like 6, 7, 8 viewings in. Like, he made so many different movies within one film. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Us. Like, you know, I remember Lupita talking about the idea that, like, you know, you have to make you do have to do things in your performance for the second watch, essentially. And like, but so I find it all interesting.
The
Get Out for sure.
Of the tunnels underneath isn't as explored to me.
Well, and also, I don't know if you guys remember, we had some pretty intense debates in the early days of Real Blend, Kevin and I did, about like the tunnels is what ended up keeping me from hailing it a master. Like, that to me, the tunnels is you have to have a massive lapse in believability in order to justify in your head the fact that
and
that
in
works.
Some movies that's generally fine. You could just be like, all right, well, that's what he's introducing, and that's the thing. Yeah. But like, it to me, you're right. To me, it keeps it from being
Yeah. Now, if we were doing a list of,
I think it's a part of the genius of us, though, because so much of us is just drenched in symbolism.
Sure.
Like,
yes,
he gets
sure.
really metaphorical with a lot of his visuals and a lot of, like, just the way that it's structured or the way that things are placed within the story. He just has like three or four levels too, which I think is a tilt on what he did with Get Out, which also is very layered.
All right, we have a lot more.
Us also has one of the best split diopter shots of all time, just for cinematography nerds out there.
I wish that opening bit was Get Out versus Nope, just to see Kevin's head explode. That's
tough. That'd be a tough one. Please make the right choice here.
All right, so we have Hereditary and we have The Witch.
Hereditary, no question.
See, to me, it's The Witch. I don't know. Hereditary doesn't do it for me.
When was the last time you watched it?
I've tried multiple times.
I didn't love it the first time I saw it. I rewatched it about 3 weeks ago. It is, one, it's absolutely horrifying.
It is.
And two,
striking.
The way that he shoots the film. So everything that leads up to the moment when the sister gets her head cut off in the car with Alex Wolff, the way the film shifts its tone from that point forward is just a sense of dread in your stomach and then the ending is just, it's in, I think Hereditary is one of the best horror films I've ever seen. On a rewatch.
For me, I love The Witch.
They're both great. The Witch, what's interesting, I'm not as easily sort of decided here. I'm leaning Hereditary because to me, from what I remember, it's worth a rewatch. The Witch was more atmospheric than it was like a really great story that stuck with me.
Oh, see, to me, the story is horrifying. Like these two little shit kids get their sister and oh my God.
Great. I remember loving it. Like I said, but the story hasn't stuck with me. It's worth a rewatch for me. I'm leaning Hereditary just because, I mean, I just felt like every scene in that was terrible.
I do love the V's in the marketing for Witch. It's really smart.
We have a Witch and two Hereditary. Are you gonna force a tiebreaker here?
No, my hot take is I don't love either of these movies.
Oh wow.
I'm not a huge horror guy, especially I'm even less interested in this intellectual horror that is really, I want my horror to be dumb and slasher. That's just my guilty pleasure.
Well, you would love Terrifier then.
I might. Yeah.
Terrifier is not dumb, but it is slasher.
I will go with Hereditary because I think Toni Collette is incredible and I'll never forget the feeling I had when that girl's head got knocked off by the pole.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm not angry at it being disturbing. Hereditary. Like, it's not one of those, like, oh my God, I'm going to not talk to you guys for the next week. Like, it's,
Up next, we have Don't Breathe versus It Follows.
Oh, this is tough.
Very good.
Oh, come on. It's got to be It Follows. Yeah, it's got to be It Follows.
I'm going It Follows as well, too.
So the flip on the old cliche where if you have sex, you die.
Yeah.
And it being flipped around where you have to have sex in order to survive.
The meta. Yeah. The meta slasher sort of storytelling of it is what's amazing. Don't Breathe is amazing. Yeah,
the turkey baster.
It's terrifying. Terrifying. But the experience that I don't think I've ever had, especially in a movie theater, but watching anything, is with It Follows, you're paying attention to the story, like you're into it, but you're constantly looking around the frame to try to find the thing because they set it up so well that it's there. It's always there and it's coming.
It's chilling.
It's so good.
You know what,
it's
people, so I haven't seen Smile yet. And some people say Smile 2 is actually great.
Yeah, I've heard Smile 2 is great. Smile 1 just felt like The Ring to me.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. To me, it's just The Ring. It's just it's the same bit.
Up next, we have for the audio listeners, let me introduce The Conjuring versus Saw.
Conjuring.
Yeah, I'm going to go Conjuring too, because Conjuring is legit scary. Like, Saw, don't get me wrong, Saw, I mean, that reveal at the end is incredible, and I still think the Saw theme is one of my favorite movie themes ever.
Mm-hmm. And deserves respect for kind of being what it was at its time.
Sure, but The Conjuring is just, to me, it's timeless horror. It will be just as effective in 50 years as it is right now.
Absolutely,
Speaking of...
And also, wasn't The Conjuring rated R? Because it is scary.
Exactly right. Just out of pure fear.
For fear.
It was. Like, that literally was rated R.
There's no violence. There's no blood. That's there's no gore. There's no language. There's no sex.
It deserves it. It deserves it.
And the MPAA rating just says scary as shit.
I'm scared. It's R. Right.
Jake, speaking of timeless horror.
Yeah.
Yikes.
We have The Exorcist versus Psycho.
For me, it's Exorcist.
It's Exorcist.
I think it's Exorcist.
Psycho is a classic movie, but it's, I don't really know how much of
it. Oh, I love it. It's a fun watch. I rewatched it last year. It's a fun watch, man. Oh, it's a horror movie. It's absolute. Don't be that guy, Sean. Don't be that guy.
It's the softest. It's the softest. Softest horror movie you've ever seen. It's like Disney horror.
A man dresses as his mother, takes a butcher's knife and chops up people in a hotel. That's horror, baby. You put that down on a sheet of paper and you read that story and you say that's a scary story.
It's proto horror. Yeah. I mean, there's so much of it in Psycho that establishes everything to come, including The Exorcist. Yeah.
Oh, spoiler alert, by the way.
You're putting that movie in the same category as something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, Psycho is one of the greatest horror movies of all time.
It's of its time. I mean, you got to think about the audience. Come on, you got to think about how terrifying that was for the audience that it was made for.
Yeah, yeah. Also remember, like, you know, before Psycho, seeing a lead star kill off that quickly in the film.
Again, this is the cliched thing. But everyone who saw that movie thought that they saw the woman get stabbed in the shower, but they never did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like the Pulp Fiction needle in the chest.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I want to go Psycho here, but I mean, Exorcist is, next to The Shining, probably the scariest movie I've ever seen. And I rewatched The Exorcist recently.
It builds on the shoulders of Psycho.
It still is very effective. You can feel how cold it is in that room.
Oh, my God.
When you're watching it is. I still can't get over that they got away with the scene with the cross. I don't understand how they even got away with that.
The Exorcist walked so Terrifier 3 could run. Yeah, if you know what I'm talking about.
And there's a Terrifier moment in the new Terrifier film.
If you know, you know. And Gabe and I had a very sweet Exorcist date after our DC live recording. We went to both the house and the steps.
Yeah. That's really cool.
It was very sweet.
Yeah, and we totally didn't get haunted or possessed.
Not at all. That we know of.
All right. We're going to keep it moving, boys. We got a whole other side of this bracket to get through. Right now we have The Shining versus The Omen.
Shining. So this is the easiest one so far. To me, this is The Shining. Yeah. No, I did. I rewatched The Omen earlier this year to get ready for the prequel. And it's great. I mean, it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. This is one where I felt like I saw The Omen and I was like, I feel like you got to include it. It's got to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Gregory Peck, man.
Yeah. The Shining is...
Even if it's a first-round exit, it's still...
No, I gotta say, that the prequel...
Representation.
The prequel I don't love because it, like, retcons some of the stuff in the original, and that really bothers me. That was one of my biggest issues.
I loved First Omen.
Oh, you did not do bottom left.
Don't jump ahead.
Oh, sorry.
All right, up next, we have... Cujo versus Jaws.
I'm going to go Jaws.
Jaws.
I always felt bad about Cujo. Like, you guys, you guys talk a lot about, it's not the villain. And I get that, like, the dog's the villain, but the dog has rabies.
I love how you're changing your tune for the dog here.
No, because a dog with rabies acts like that. Jaws was going after Quint.
Well, hang on. I think we're just kind of, it's a rabid dog. It's not just a dog. It's a rabid dog. Like, that's
not all sharks act like that.
I don't think that matters. Maybe the shark has something going on. We're watching a movie. It doesn't matter. We're watching a movie.
I mean, they're both the villains, but Cujo makes me feel bad.
The shark was having a bad week. He was having a tough week.
What if the shark got laid off or something, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe it missed a payment. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, up next.
Maybe it had to go to the dentist and it had cavities.
Yeah.
The shark, you know?
All right, moving on. We have The Thing versus Alien.
Alien.
I would go The Thing if you're talking about horror.
There's no wrong choice, but I'm going Alien.
I would go The Thing if we're talking horror movie. Even though I think Alien is a horror film and Aliens is an action film, I would say The Thing.
Even The Thing poster has the word Alien on it.
I'm going with The Thing.
I think The Thing is the better horror film.
I don't know that I agree with that. Aliens so terrifying.
No, we love Alien.
But look at The Thing's poster calls it the ultimate in Alien horror.
Yeah, Alien.
But the Thing is the ultimate, and it's literally saying it's better than Alien.
Yeah. What's that say in small letters in the Alien poster? Fuck you, John Carpenter.
If we're talking about taglines, then Alien would win this in 2 seconds.
Tagline, you're not going to beat. Yeah, that's true. Wait, what do we do with a tie? Alphabetical order?
No, I think we can have a quick discussion. Is there anyone that would be willing to jump to Alien? Like, is it close enough? For me, it's close enough.
Honestly, so could I. Like, that's what it feels like. Because, like I said, I'm not going to be mad if either of these advance.
Before us jump and we keep a tie.
Let's just bend to Alien.
All right, we're gonna go with Alien. We're gonna go all with right. Alien.
Shit.
But could have went either way.
That's tough. Right.
Oh, we got to finish this side. Right,
let's do a little speed round on this side.
Let's and then we'll get out. The
other.
Let's go.
Get out. Hereditary, I think Get Out.
Get Out versus Hereditary, Get Out.
Get Out for sure. All right. Then
I'm just doing this for the audio listeners.
I got you. Yeah. It Follows versus The Conjuring.
Conjuring.
It Follows.
I'm going to say Conjuring.
Okay, hang on.
It Follows.
Jake?
Conjuring.
Conjuring. Kev?
It Follows.
John?
Conjuring.
Conjuring takes it.
All right.
All right, now that leads us to The Exorcist versus The Shining. Sean, you have one?
Exorcist.
Ooh, Kev?
Shining.
Jake,
come on, man. Don't do this to
me. I know where I'm going.
Jake, you know.
I know where I'm going.
I'm going Exorcist.
Yes,
I'm going The Shining.
God damn it. Guys, The Shining is not scarier than The Exorcist.
Yes, okay. No, we're not talking scary. We're not talking scary.
Why not?
I mean, that's a, no. That, yeah, you're right. That could be a
what
factor.
Are we talking?
What am I talking about? Yeah.
What are we talking then?
Yeah.
And again, I think it's a this or that. I'm taking The Shining over The Exorcist. If I'm given these two, I'm taking The Shining over The Exorcist. Personally.
I'm taking The Shining.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah. I gotcha. Okay, The Shining is a better movie than The Exorcist overall. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so I agree with Sean. Exorcist is a scarier movie, but I think The Shining is a better film.
Not so sure it is, to be honest with you. I think they're pretty neck and neck. I mean, don't forget, The Exorcist was the first horror movie to ever be nominated for Best Picture.
No, believe me, they're close. There's a hair separating them.
And like score, performances, direction, cinematography, you could make an argument for both of them.
Oh, yeah, they're both phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'll go Shining.
Shining moves on. Now we have Jaws versus Alien.
Oh, God. Jaws.
I still have to go Jaws.
Jaws.
I think Jaws, yeah. I mean, this is close, though. If we were going scarier, I think Alien's scarier, right? If we were going to go that.
Right? I think Jaws is scarier.
Jaws is scarier. You think so? I think.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Because Jaws made you afraid of something you could do. Yes. On a regular basis.
We can't go to space. We can, but we most people can't.
Right.
Yeah.
We can't.
Still on this side of the bracket, we have Get Out versus The Conjuring.
Get Out.
Get Out.
I think Get Out.
All right. I would have gone Conjuring.
You would have gone Conjuring.
But that's fine.
Okay. For the record, he went Conjuring. Then we have The Shining versus Jaws.
Oh.
I think, oh man, actually, I thought I was going to very quickly go to Shining.
I'm going to say Jaws.
Wow. I'm going to say Shining.
I think I go Shining now because this is a horror movie bracket.
Jaws is a horror movie?
It is, but I'm just saying, like, if I'm thinking horror movie bracket, I'm giving the horror edge to The Shining.
Yeah.
If it was a movie overall, I'm probably giving it Jaws, you know, blockbuster, obviously.
I think you know what's so funny is all the ones we're disagreeing on, like, I haven't been mad about any of the ones I've lost. Like, all the ones that we've disagreed on, I'm sort of like, okay, I'm fine with the other side.
We have a whole other side of this bracket to get to, too, which will
all
be
right,
fun.
Give me Shining.
All right, Shining.
Oh, I hate that. God
Kev,
damn
you
it.
Said The Shining
no.
too?
Said Shining.
Oh, I love Jaws.
So yeah, well, you voted against it, so think about that.
The Shining versus Get Out. I give it to The Shining. Jordan Peele would give this to The Shining.
Yeah, Jordan Peele would give it to The Shining. You're exactly right.
It's not an easy choice.
But hey, Get Out made it this far. I love
that. Well done.
And Get Out's now Getting Out.
Hey,
Get Out. It is. Modern classic.
It got out.
All right, now we have Sinister versus The Ring. For me, it's Sinister. The Ring never really did it for me.
Sinister. Scariest movie I've ever seen.
Sinister, I agree. One of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
Still haven't seen it, so I'll have to treat you.
Dude,
to trust
it is
you
genuinely
guys.
Like, when people ask me, I always say, listen, there's a difference between best and scariest movie.
Yeah.
When people ask me, what's the scariest movie you've ever seen? I think Kevin agrees with me. We say Sinister.
Sinister or The Exorcist are right there.
No, The Ring does have one of the best jump scares of all time. The closet scene.
It does.
And next, we have Hostel versus Final Destination. Hostel films never did it for me, so I'm going Final Destination.
I am
Final Destination has to
Final
move
Destination.
Forward.
Final Destination.
I am
this
right.
is one
ubiquitous.
one of the best franchises ever. I think one of the greatest twist endings is Final Destination 5 when they flip back to the original ending of, or the beginning of the first movie. It is so smart.
I just hated that run of torture porn, like the hostile.
Never really did it for me. Yeah.
No, I didn't care for that at all.
Yeah. All right. Up next. This was a fun one. I wanted to throw a little bit.
These are cool. These are fun.
Ready or Not versus Happy Death Day. Great films. So fun to watch.
I'm going to say Ready or Not just because I got to be honest, the whole Groundhog Day bit gets old for me pretty fast.
Okay.
In any genre.
Yeah.
What about in Groundhog Day?
But that one's really clever.
It's very clever, but for me, Ready or Not has a much higher replay value.
I liked this. I liked when I put this together. This one I felt was nice because these both felt like refreshing.
Yes,
fun
100%.
When they came
100%.
I'll go Ready or Not.
I like Ready or Not.
Okay.
I'm in the Happier Death Day camp.
That's fine. Okay. They're both. I will say that the sequel has to be Here I Come.
Are they going to do? Are they?
They just greenlit it. You have to call it Here I Come.
You know what's better than Ready or Not? And I don't know why I put these two movies in the same field as You're Next.
Yes. I confuse them a little bit sometimes.
Interesting.
You're Next is also great.
My vote is Happy Death Day, but I'm okay with Ready or Not. It's fine.
Ready or Not moves on. All right, boys.
I'm going to make the argument this is actually a pretty easy one because I think people romanticize the nostalgia of the limited series. I think it's a lot slower and older and aged than you remember it being.
The performance, the Pennywise performance is iconic. Yes. It's fantastic.
But he's
not
in it as much as people remember him being. And again, it's almost the Hannibal Lecter thing, but I'm going the new It.
Also, I rewatched
this
chapter
one.
Sorry,
for the folks at home, this is It, the miniseries versus, and I'm
oh, I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
The two It films.
Oh, so It on the side here is It 1 and 2?
I think because the miniseries covers the whole book, we'll just give it the sort of the It story. Which It story?
I do think chapter 1 is much better than chapter 2.
That's the case in the book as well. Anyone who reads the book will tell you that the kid, because it actually goes back, it's not like one half, it goes back and forth. Anyone who's read the book will tell you that the kid chapters are infinitely more interesting than the adult. That's been a flaw of the book.
There are chunks from, and I agree with you, I don't think 2 is as good of a movie, but there are chunks in that movie that are as dark as King's novel. Like,
oh yeah,
the murder of the guy at the carnival at the beginning.
Yes.
I forget his
name.
Yes. Pretty important character, and I forget it. I'm blanking on his name, but that was really brutal. Really, really brutal.
I'm going to pick up the pace because
Muschietti's. I'm voting Muschietti's.
Yeah.
Yep. Getty moves on. Kevin has a hard on, so we're going to keep moving.
Let's go.
Up next, we have Poltergeist versus the Blair Witch Project.
I'm going to go Poltergeist.
I'm going Poltergeist. I love the idea of Blair Witch, but the movie as a whole never worked for me, so I'm going Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. I think I'm leaning Poltergeist. Blair Witch, I think I was around for that, so I have, I think, a bit of like a fond nostalgia for it. But
yeah,
I'm going.
That was
like,
I remember that time. That was when I remember being at the age where I remember thinking like it was a great moment.
It's not a movie I'm putting back on ever.
The nighttime scenes for Blair Witch are really scary.
Very good,
but the daytime scenes drag.
Up next, we have Halloween versus Friday the 13th.
Halloween,
my boy.
Yeah, it's
my boy is Halloween.
It's got to be Halloween just because the first Friday the 13th is not even the best Friday the 13th.
Right.
I think we can take these as like these films.
I know what you're saying.
I'm going to disagree with that. I think it's got to be head to head. It's got to be.
That's fine. Well, then, yeah. I mean, Halloween
head
takes
because then you're talking. Then you're talking like Jason versus Michael.
That's kind of how I feel.
Jason's not the killer in Friday.
I guess I think that's just how I think of slasher films. Is I'm very much just thinking of the slasher.
Sure.
In general,
I still think it's Halloween.
It's Halloween. Yeah.
Halloween has a ratio of better movies than Friday 13th. Wow.
I'm seeing Halloween in theaters later this year.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, I'm very excited. All right. Then we have Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream.
Scream for me.
I'm going Nightmare.
It's Scream for me.
I'm going Nightmare. You don't have Scream without Nightmare. Well,
you could argue that for every movie ever.
And then Psycho wins. Then Psycho wins.
I was like, as soon as Sean said that, I was like, that's not going to go as well as he thought it was going to.
But that's not going to break his way. You don't.
To me, the Robert Englund performance, to me, just the general plot of an inescapable killer, because he finds you whenever you are at your weakest.
All right. Can either of you move over, or Kevin? No. I feel pretty solidly in Scream.
I can't move over.
I'm solid on Scream too.
All right, I'm gonna do a random number generator.
Why don't you flip and do it? Does anyone have a coin?
No, I got it. If it's even, it goes Nightmare. If it's odd, it goes Scream.
Okay.
And I don't have evidence. You just have to trust me. It's even.
Nightmare.
Nightmare.
I trust
all
you.
Good.
All right. Oof. Now we have evil. The Evil Dead. Versus the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Evil Dead.
Easy Texas Chainsaw. I'm very strongly in the Texas Chainsaw camp.
I agree. The first Evil Dead, especially if we're just doing the first Evil Dead, is not as, to me, I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the sequels.
Evil Dead 2 is better. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, Texas Chainsaw.
All right, I get it. If we're doing first like we just did with Halloween, then okay, Texas Chainsaw.
I'm going Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you get the chainsaw bit here?
If you put two, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
He doesn't get the chainsaw till later, though.
No, but I had to have a matchup.
We can't start weighing the sequels now because we didn't do that when we talked about like Alien or
Jaws 2. You know,
Jaws 2.
Yeah. That would prevent Jaws from going forward.
All right. Let's keep it moving through this side. We have Sinister versus Final Destination. Nostalgia goes to Final Destination, but I think this pick for me goes to Sinister.
I'm going Sinister.
Sinister.
I'm going Final Destination.
And then, Sean, are you just Sean
hasn't seen Sinister.
I'll say Sinister.
We'll take just because of the lore. Lore of Sinister.
I also feel like Final Destination got through one round. It should be happy.
Ready or Not versus It.
I'm going to say It. Me. I loved both It films, actually.
I'm saying It as well, too. The casting of the kids carries it along.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Those kid actors are tremendous.
And I think the first movie is so great that the stuff that doesn't work in two is like, you know.
But again, I'll emphasize a lot of the stuff that doesn't work in two, and I say this with all the love and respect in the world, is King's fault.
Yeah. No, I understand. But I think also when you're adapting something, and you know, it's that sort of like, do you go page for page or do you...
Well, you know what they shouldn't have done, honestly, because it makes it clunky, is you shouldn't have separated a movie of the kids and a movie of the adults. Like, if you're going to do it, the beginning.
They didn't even know that they were going to do it. Remember, they were waiting on the green light. They didn't even have a green light for, they Duned it.
The biggest sin of that movie for me is the structure of all of the adults seeing Pennywise, and they do six of them, one after the other.
I get that.
Like, I think even if you had just intercut those, it could have been great and had them all sort of structurally build tension.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was like, I just saw this three times and now I have to see this three more times.
Mm-hmm.
The casting of Bill Hader is unbelievable, though.
Yeah, that's perfect.
All right, we have Poltergeist versus Halloween.
Halloween.
Halloween. Easy Halloween.
Halloween, baby.
Halloween, baby.
Texas Chainsaw versus A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I would go Elm Street.
I'm feeling Chainsaw.
I'm feeling Chainsaw, too.
Oh, Chainsaw. Yeah. All right, that leaves us with Sinister versus the new It films.
I gotta go It.
I'm going Sinister.
Sinister.
I'm going Sinister.
All right.
It is great, though. Well done.
You know what? You can't spell Sinister movie. Without It. Oh, man. This is tough.
All right.
Sin-itter.
Halloween.
All right. Halloween versus the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm going Halloween. I'm going Chainsaw.
I'm going Halloween.
Halloween for me.
Halloween takes it. And then that leaves us with Sinister versus Halloween.
Can we call out our final four?
Way to go, Sinister.
Final four, we have, let's see, what were our final four? We had Get Out versus The Shining. We had Sinister versus Halloween. And now Sinister or Halloween is going to the finals.
Halloween.
I got to go Halloween.
Kev?
I'm going to go with Halloween.
Halloween, it's ubiquitous Halloween. And now for the The whole thing.
That's a hell of a championship. That's why I like. I didn't want the championship to be the Shining versus Sinister.
This is going to Game 7. The Shining versus Halloween. I mean, I'm leaning, and maybe this is the little prestigious person in me. I'm leaning The Shining just because it's The Shining. Like, yeah. Does that make sense?
I'm going Shining.
And Halloween taking second, I'm okay with. Wah.
Halloween.
Ooh, I gotta go Shining.
3-1 to The Shining.
Shining takes it. But again, I gotta be honest. You picked really great movies for the matchups because there are several of these where I sort of thought like one of them has to lose, and I don't want to lose either.
I tried to get some stuff like
that. Nice.
I put them into like four quadrants of some modern horror, some classics.
Yeah, I would say you bracketed them very well.
Thank you.
All right, Kev's got a
hard
out.
I'm happy with that.
I'm very happy with that as well too. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to the bracket fights. Where Gabe, let's try to have one more at least for Halloween.
Yeah, we'll try to do it.
These have been a lot of fun. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for listening to Andrew Garfield and John Crowley. We'll have more interviews coming up. In the meantime, follow us on social media. And until next week, night, bitch.
Dunkirk.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
New Jersey's got a lot of historic wows. From Victorian beach towns to Revolutionary War battlegrounds. Explore wow after wow at more than 463 historic landmarks. In museums, lighthouses, and over 58 state and national parks. It's one wow after another after another. You get it. Find your wow at visitnj.org/history. New Jersey, little state, lot of wow.